Welcome to the July 27th, 2021 Credentials Community Group call. Today we are going to hear from the Encrypted Data Vault Task Force to tell us about what they're doing. And I think maybe we are also going to hear about Identity Hub updates. Kalia, I'm not sure. I didn't hear back from Dan about that, so I don't know if you can,
We have Dan's presentation. He's unable to join us.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then there are some new work items. There's one new work item, and we'll spend a little bit of time looking at that as well. Okay. Anyone can participate in the CCG calls. However, any substantive contributors to any work item must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreements signed. You must have a W3 account to do that, and you must sign the W3C contributor license agreement. Call notes. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at the CCG Minutes link.
You might be muted, Heather. Accidental mute, maybe.
Oh my God. Yes, I am accidentally muted. Thank you. Let's see.
Last thing we heard was hear the minutes.
Okay, great. Wow. I wonder how that happened because I wasn't even in the Jitsi, window. Okay. Call notes. All right. Okay. So did you hear that we use IRC and Jitsi chat to cue speakers during the call?
Nope.
Okay. Wow, that was weird. Okay. So we use IRC and Jitsi chat to cue speakers during the call as well as take minutes. If you have logged in via Jitsi, the system will automatically present plus you to include your name in the attendee list with the transcript. In the chat, you type Q plus, and that's the plus sign to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder afterwards. If you are not in the chat or either Jitsi chat or IRC, you're just audio, just speak up and the chairs will put you on the queue. Try to keep your comment on the queue brief. You can always re-queue yourself later. This meeting is held by voice, not IRC. Off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. Okay, now, scribe selection. Would anyone like to volunteer to scribe today before I go into the uncomfortable silence of calling people's names? Okay. Let's do scribe selection. Okay. Kim, do we have you here? No. Chris? Dave Longley? Dimitri? I see you're here, Dimitri, but are you going to be presenting today?
Right. I am here, but I'm going to be presenting the Identity Hub part.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Okay, so we'll skip you, Dimitri. Ori, can you scribe today? He was just here. Ori, are you able to do scribe today? Oh, Mahmoud?
He dropped for some reason.
Okay. Oh, you know, it showed that he was still on there, but on the speaker stats list, but that's okay. Mahmoud, thank you so much. You are a rock star, and you have been doing overtime scribe, community scribing. So thank you for that. Great. Okay, so next up is introductions and reintroductions. Is there anyone new on the call that would like to introduce themselves?
So just I think Dan might be new, Dan Bockenheimer. I'd love to hear an intro if that's okay, Dan. You don't need to, but. I guess not.
Dan, okay. I see Derek Trider. Derek, are you new?
Yeah, sure. I could do an intro. Hey, my name is Derek. I'm working on the Encrypted Data Vault spec as an editor. Just recently started in that role, so I'm here to see... Manu and co present some updates to you all. So yeah, I'm pretty new to this whole thing, but trying to learn more about it. So yeah, good to be here.
Great. Thanks so much for the intro, Derek. Anyone want to do any reintroductions? Christina, I see you on. Can we potentially invite you to do a reintroduction today?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Christina, Identity Standards at Microsoft. Don't kick me out just for that. Joining to learn the updates on EDBs and ID Hub, and I also saw on GitHub that VC job data model might be, VC job test suite might be discussed. So if not, that's okay. Nothing much new.
Great. Thanks for joining, Christina. And if you're in Japan, thank you for coming. It's so late there. Appreciate you, being here at this time. Okay. So progress and action items. Okay. So let's look at, there are a couple different, new work items, et cetera, that have been, submitted last week. One of the ones that I wanted to, I tagged all of these to look at today, but I'm going to time box them and see. We'll start with issue 198 first, and then we can see if it uses more time. I might punt on the other ones for the other ones. But Christina, just to confirm, you're here to discuss this VC data to interrupt test artifact one. Correct?
Because there's an update, yeah.
Okay, great. So here it is, issue 198. I'll put the link in here. So basically saw this as a new work item and wanted to give the work item owners and the folks on this thread to talk about what the work item is and have a discussion, and I will time box this to 10 minutes unless... we end up needing a bit more time. So, Charles or Juan or Christina, I'm not really sure who of you I should pass this over to kind of take the lead on that.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy to contextualize it a little bit. Can you guys hear me okay? I'm on a weird setup.
Yep,
Juan.
Okay. The VC HTTP API, group has had a couple discussions about this, mostly on GitHub and the mailing list. And there, we actually, discussed it a few weeks ago on this call, on the weekly. And, just for the sake of trying to parallelize work and break apart from that working group some open questions and to be able to come back to that working group with like more of a package and a defined thing and say like, these are the specs that we're proposing should be usable, over the API, the very happy API. That was sort of the impetus, and the conversation on GitHub has been, about which specs, how to use them, how to constrain them, whether the target is, you know, different kinds of cross JWT, JSON-LD interop issues, whether or not they're in scope. So really, in terms of the work item itself, if a lot of volunteers want to help, define, you know, what Kim referred to as the normative jot, a couple of different options or parameters of that. What volunteers are willing to help clarify, provide examples, provide des vectors. I you know, me and Charles from Spruce initiated it and sort of want to see it through in the editor sense, but we don't necessarily have an agenda. It isn't like we want exactly these versions of jots to be covered and not those. So the scope's a little open to negotiation and consensus. But yeah, we just wanted to facilitate something that made some subset of the jot world intelligible to the API working group.
Thanks, Juan. Manu, I see you're on the queue.
Yeah, so a huge plus one to this work. I think it's really important that the work gets done. For those that don't have a background, the VC jot stuff was kind of injected into the VC specification in kind of the 11th hour of the working group. And there was never really good thorough vetting of it, and that's it's resulted in a bunch of different implementations that don't interoperate. And so plus one for getting this work item done so that we have real interop on the VC jot stuff. The other thing, you know, I wanted to kind of suggest, and this may sound sacrilegious, but feel free to break the VC spec. I think that there may have been some decisions that were made at the last minute in the VC spec that were the wrong decisions because we were so pressed for time. And given that we have not achieved, interop based on the VC spec, I think it's better that, you know, the folks that care about VC jots get together and do the right thing rather than just follow the VC spec, you know, to the letter. And I realize that might be a controversial thing to say, but I don't think we have very many conforming, you know, implementations of what's in the VC spec now. And then we can, you know, when the VC working group is rechartered, we can, say, oh, you know, we got it wrong. Let's fix it. We actually have demonstrable interop now and let's do that instead. That's it.
Great. Thanks, Manu. I put myself on the queue. I had a question about the work item owners. I was just reviewing the CCG requirements for new work items and it requires two different owners from two different companies. Are Charles and Juan, I see you on here. Are you both representing Spruce or are you, representing another organization or is there a third owner that can support. Okay, I see Ori is willing to be a co-owner from Transmute. So that would be great if Ori can just update that as or anyone else who wants to join. I just want to make sure that we hit all of the requirements. So great, thank you for that, Ori. Christina, you're up next.
Yeah, I think just to comment on what Manu said, in the conversations, there's some conversations in CNC to working group two regarding this. And the direction has been not to break the VC data model, right? Like, sure, there are some fluffy places that needs to be cleared out to reach full conformance and interoperability. So highest goal being we want to have interoperable and conforming on VC job implementations, but within the VC data model boundaries, right? So sure, there will be some aspects on that would have to be figured out, but, you know, decisions to be made that probably not in the text, but within the VC data model, that should be the first choice. At least that has been, I think, the direction, just to clarify.
Thanks, Christina. I don't know why I'm on the queue anymore. Any other comments? Juan, you're on the queue.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to point out, Christina's referring to a work item spinning up in Planes and Credentials, which is a test suite for a specific JWS spec, which is the detached signature LB proof spec that Ori wrote here in CCG. And I just wanted to say a lot of people have been asking what the division of labor is between these two different work items. And I think that is sort of a conformance spec. That's like, are you using this one spec correctly? and this is more like an interop spec, which looks potentially a little, could include the JWS spec and or others, right? And I think that since a lot of us are going to be participating in both, it's easy to keep the two aligned and not redundant and not competing. That would be my only comment about the diff working group, the JWS one.
Thanks, Juan. Charles, you're up next.
Hi, thanks. I think everything important that I would have said has been covered, and I'm looking forward to working with you all, everyone who wants to contribute to this. Thanks.
Great. So I haven't heard any issues or concerns that we have not been able to resolve during the call. So we still have another minute. If you have issues, bring it up in the call, or we'll give it a week on the GitHub. Otherwise, seems like we have support to move forward with this work item. Okay, this is great. Good job, everyone. Let's see. Do you think that we can go through these collaborative open specifications of the DID TZ and the DID PKH methods? Are these going to take a lot of discussion? Or do you think we can bang these out in like 5 minutes?
No, I think I can definitely cover them both in 5 minutes.
Awesome.
DID Tezos is a pretty simple one. Like a lot of one blockchain DID methods, it is specific to the, smart contract language and properties of the Tezos blockchain. It has some side tree like bits attached, and because there's two different teams in the Tezos ecosystem working on potentially designing or proposing side tree like things, we just wanted to work on the spec together, preferably in the open. So since we already had two companies working on the same thing, we just thought we would do it here. And the PKH one, is more like, this one, is more like a, kind of like DID key. It's a sort of deterministic way of generating a DID document from a public key hash. Just to be more precise, public key hashes are blockchain addresses that are hashes of a public key in blockchains that use that system. And all the various ways of making a public key hash or a blockchain address from a public key are indexed in this thing called CAIP-10, which is kind of like multi-base or multi-hash. It's like just an open source, I think, codec. I'm not sure. Sorry, my terminology is a little off. But it's like a way to assume certain things. Like if you know this is a hash, if it's this kind of blockchain address, you know it's a hash of this kind of key, and you can sort of deduce certain things. So just to handle all those transformations in an open source library that lets you borrow the identity system of a blockchain and sort of generate a DID from a authenticated blockchain address. That's what this is for. It's like not really, it's not like a full featured DID method, but it's a little more complicated than DID key. It's sort of like a multi-DID key, a DID Swiss Army knife. I don't know. So yeah, there we're working with Joel from, Joel Thorstensen, OED, who is, very active at DIF and in the Ethereum community. And yeah, that's, we'd like both of these to just be public meetings. So if people want to drop in or just observe or lurk on GitHub, we welcome input on both these methods.
Great. Thanks, Swan, for, going over both of those. Manu, you are in the queue.
Yeah. So, plus one, I, you know, supportive of both items. I thought we had a discussion about do we do DID methods in the credentials community group a while ago. And my understanding of the discussion was there was a decent chunk of the community that was like, please no, let's not do that. Like they can go do their thing in their own, you know, deal. And this mostly was coming from like the people that are vehemently opposed to DLTs being mixed in with, you know, credentials. So if we're now going to start working on DID methods, I think that's great. You know, this community certainly has a lot of interest in it and I'm supportive of it. And if we're going to do that, then we definitely want to start talking about, you know, Verus One and some of the other DID methods, DID Web, DID Key, in here as well. And then maybe even, you know, start requesting kind of meetings on those. So it's partially a question. I'm supportive of the direction. Certainly wouldn't want to, you know, send, you know, this work elsewhere. I'm just wondering, you know, are we entering a new phase in the group where we start working on this kind of stuff in the CCG?
Thanks, Manu. That's a great question. And I think that mine might kind of like double map up with that. And perhaps this is also maybe time for us to discuss as well, what is going to be happening with the kind of work that was being discussed in the DID working group. If that working group is going to, you know, complete its work, what happens to it? And then, do we want to, you know, take on some discussions, that might have happened in that meeting, back in this meeting. I'm just kind of noodling right now. But my question to Juan was, it sounded like you were talking about maybe having a meeting or you wanted to have open meetings to discuss this. I was curious if you were looking to have a new meeting set up to do this or if there was a part of an existing meeting or if maybe you wanted to have these meetings as part of the regular CCG call. So, I mean, you might still be figuring that out. So I was just kind of curious to get any thoughts on that.
Should I jump queue before Mike?
Yeah, sure. To answer that question.
let me just say I'm the PKH one, I think, is much more important to specify in the open, and much more important to get outside feedback on. That one I would really like to be a CCG item at some point. Maybe, I don't know, periodic meetings or something, not like weekly. The Tezos one, I honestly, didn't know there was this, boundary on, you know, the Tezos one doesn't necessarily have to be public regular meetings. That one was probably going to be a little faster anyways. That was more like, we just wanted to do it on GitHub and, you know, maybe present like a check-in, like in 8 or 10 weeks, come back to the group and ask for a time on the agenda to present it.
That's for the Tezos one. That sounds, reasonable. I think my question about the meetings is just we have so many different task force and meetings right now. Yeah. And I don't necessarily want, I don't know if anyone wants to add like another weekly meeting. And so if there's like a place to have those meetings or alternate, or if you want part of the space within the CCG crew, like the chairs could talk about where it makes sense to have this work be done without it like adding another hour a week onto our schedules. Okay, Mike, you're up next on the queue.
Yeah, I was going to say the thing I think that's a little bit interesting about the PKH side of things is that it is, you know, one of those things aimed at, you know, kind of cross compatibility and testing without necessarily forcing a hard reliance on a ledger. So it's not the same, obviously, as something like DidKey or DidWeb, but does have some shared properties of that as opposed to a, you know, DID method that is explicitly tied back to, you know, one ledger or another. So I think there are kind of broad benefits to at least looking at this stuff from the community side. In fact, I think I saw a comment on the issue that I might find this interesting, and I certainly do. So, but it is, I think Manu's raising some interesting points, right? Because this is a little bit different than, do we necessarily want to open the floodgates, right, to a whole bunch of every variety of DID method, et cetera. But I think there are things that, are beneficial from kind of a broader ecosystem and cross compatibility standpoint that are worth addressing as a community. So.
Okay, so one, you're up next on the queue.
I don't want to drag this out. I just wanted to say that, the PKH one is like DidKey. It's more like DidKey than a blockchain method. It's a general purpose way to get DidKeys from existing key management systems. And for that reason, I just assumed it would be more like specifying DidKey in the CCG than like DidBTCR. And it has already been registered. I don't want to suck up a lot of time or make more meetings for people. This was just sort of a consultative thing. Like, I just wanted to gather use cases and make sure that it isn't being implemented or specified in a way that needlessly constrains what you can do with a PKH or makes false assumptions about some of the entries in the CAIP table that I know nothing about. That's all.
I think Swan, Ori, you're up next on the queue.
Yeah. So regarding that CAIP, table, it is in a way kind of reinventing aspects of the multicodec table that, DidKey relies on. So, I mean, I know we all want more DID methods to be created. That's pretty much the number one thing that I'm committed to. But in a world where we wanted these things to all be DID keys, whether a key is a hash of a key or a key, we could technically just register a few extra multi-codec prefixes for the CAPE 10 entries. And then you could just make, DID PKH, a subset of DID key. If that's agreeable, you could expand DID key to support keys that are really hashes of keys by just adding extra entries to multicodec. So that's really not that hard to do. But you know, there might be a really, really good reason not to extend DidKey to support that kind of thing. I'll note that DidKey already has some Snowflake properties, like the key conversion aspect from ED25519 to X25519. So that's a case where you get, you start with one key identifier, but you end with a DID document that has two. And similarly for BLS 12381, G1 and G2, there's a key representation for both points, in a pairing friendly curve. So you get a DID document that has two public keys from a single identifier. Thanks.
Thanks, Ori. Wayne, you're up next.
Yeah, just a feedback on the merging DID key. This was actually our initial approach. Can we just extend DID key to do it? And then, before I address that, the CAPE 10 table, is not necessarily going to be normative in the spec. That's, I think, something up for discussion because, while most blockchains do have public key hash representations of the accounts, it's not the case that all public key hash representations are, necessarily for blockchains, right? So there might not be a CAPE 10 entry, in which case it might be, possibly optional for some, sub methods within that DID method. With respect to DID key and merging, I think that's something that we're open to discussing with the authors of DID key because technically it's not a key. It's been mangled, right? And it's kind of like key derived material. So, if that's still okay naming for everyone, we're okay to, that's an option. One of the requirements here is that, we're not re-encoding in like, some base 58 or something like that or multi-codec. Because what happens is you mangle the identifier string and you can no longer upon visual scan, very easily compare a blockchain account used in its environment in Web3 and also, the public key hash, DID identifier. So if we can keep that in, then we can continue discussions about, would it fit into DID key? And that's it.
Thanks, Wayne. This conversation kind of got a little more aside than I think we were initially thinking. I guess I want to ask the community, do we need to have a separate conversation about, DID methods and where they're developed before we can approve, or not approve these two work items? Cause I don't want to have that conversation today. I want to like either shelve that conversation for the future or move forward. With the Tezos one sounds like it's a no-brainer. And do we need to have more discussion on the PKH? Okay, Manu says that. Okay, so then let's continue. Let's shelve the DID PKH method. And I'll just shelve both of those. And then maybe we can take this up at a future meeting. So thanks, Juan. Thanks, everyone. And I think we still have plenty of time for the main event today. I hope we do. I am going to pass this over to Kalia, who is going to give a presentation on the Encrypted Data Vault activities, or you and different folks from your
group. The other community leaders are going to do
it. Right, exactly.
Manu is going to go first, giving an update on the EDV work, and then Dimitri and I will channel Daniel Buckner for you with an update on the hub work.
Great, thanks. Then I guess over to you, Manu.
Let me go ahead and share my screen. So I kind of approached this as a CCG 101 thing. I think, Heather, that's what you kind of asked for with an update on where we are. Just to remind everybody about kind of the use cases that we're trying to identify here. So a lot of it's going to just talk about use cases and different setups and kind of overall what we're trying to do and not get into the details. And then, of course, Heather, the hope is that we can use this as a CCG 101 item as well. So encrypted data vaults, what are they? We're really looking at a number of use cases when we talk about encrypted data vaults. How do we make storage providers effectively a commodity? And make it confidential so the storage provider can't see the data that we're trying to store with them. How do we unify storage across all devices? How do we unify sharing across multiple people and groups? How do we ensure that there's this kind of continuous backup mechanism? How do we maybe use this same technology to do off-ledger storage? So if people are using DLTs, how do we store data off the DLTs to protect it from compromise? How do we do wallet data portability? What is the backend storage for Identity Hub? The suggestion is that EDVs have a place to play in all of these use cases. So we're going to look at each one of these use cases one by one next. The first kind of use case for encrypted data vaults is when an individual wants to store data at a storage provider, but they want to make sure that that storage provider can't eavesdrop on their data, right? So this comes up in things like, you know, corporations when they want to store trade secrets, they want to do it kind of external to their organization or in some kind of cloud system. How do they do it in a way where they know that, you know, the storage provider can't accidentally see in the data, or if there's a compromise at the storage provider, people don't get access to their data, right? So you can think of this as like encrypted Google Drive or encrypted Dropbox. It operates kind of in the same way as those services operate, but the difference here is that the service providers can't actually see any of the data that you're storing with them. So we need, you know, one of the requirements here is we need a unified encrypted storage interface that doesn't exist in industry right now, at least at the level we're at, the layer we're talking about. And then there's no, you know, standard that says by default, the providers, storage providers can't eavesdrop on the files you're storing with them. So that's the first use case, confidential provider agnostic storage. The second use case is unified storage. And again, I mean, a lot of this is going to sound like, oh, this sounds like Dropbox or OneDrive or, G Drive. And it is to a certain degree with a tiny little twist, right? Which is things are encrypted when they're stored on the server. The benefit, I think everyone understands the benefit for unified storage is if you have multiple devices, you want your data, to be stored in one place. Or rather you want your data to show up on all of those devices in the same way. So if you know, you're working on your mobile phone and then you put your mobile phone in your pocket and open up your laptop, you want access to the same kind of files. So that's kind of what the unified storage thing is about. The other important thing there, of course, is that, if you lose your device, if your laptop's destroyed, your mobile phone, you know, is dropped in a puddle, you don't have to worry about severe data loss, right? Because everything's kind of backed up in the cloud in a safe and secure way. I think Ori's statement about this being kind of like a standards compliant LastPass is also a really good way to think about this. The other thing that encrypted data vaults are trying to do is they're trying to unify the way that we share stuff. So, you know, how does, and this is kind of the health record use case, how do we have a data vault that holds health records where the doctor and the patient in the hospital can get access to those health records in a way that helps each of them do the job that they're supposed to be doing while at the same time respecting the patient's agency and, you know, that kind of stuff. So this has a lot to do with like authorization to access, how you can add and remove entities in a standard way. So if you, again, think about, sharing any kind of, web app that allows sharing, like, you know, Google Docs, there is a share interface and what we're trying to do is standardize the way that share interface is done, using things like decentralized identifiers and, Zcaps and things of that nature. So there's a unified sharing story here as well. There's also a continuous backup, like there's a continuous backup use case, right? So what happens if you don't entirely trust your storage provider, right? This is kind of basically a zero trust attempt at storage on the internet. So if you don't trust your storage provider to either not snoop on your data or to always be there. You know, companies go out of business all the time and sometimes they explode in terrible ways. And so you don't want to lose all your data when that happens. And one of the ways to do this is to make sure that there are replicated backups. And because storage is cheap these days, it is easy to kind of replicate things even to your own home or your own devices, so that if your storage provider goes away, you still have a backup. And you're actively in control of that backup and can always walk away from the storage provider. They never kind of hold you hostage to their, you know, terms of service or their, you know, you having to be a perma customer, with them. So there's this automatic failover and resync, recovery, kind of use case, continuous backup, use case. There's also a use case for like off ledger storage. So there are a lot of blockchains, like supply chain blockchains, where you want to write things to the ledger. But the problem with writing things to a ledger is that, you never really want to write encrypted data to a ledger, because, cryptography has a shelf life. It's almost always eventually broken. But what you can try and do is register things on ledger that point to other things off ledger that actually store the really sensitive data, so that you have control over where the data is stored and who it's shared with and all that kind of stuff. So there's a use case for encrypted data vaults around off ledger storage, keeping trade sensitive data off ledger, reduction in the amount of data that you need to store on the ledger, so on and so forth. And finally, when we talk about verifiable credentials in digital wallets and credential repositories, one way of doing wallet data portability is to put all the credentials in an encrypted data vault and then give the individual the ability to switch wallet providers. So if the wallet provider supports encrypted data vaults as a backing store, in theory, we want this to be the ideal, you can move away from that wallet provider by just switching to another wallet provider and authorizing the new wallet to get access to your data vault. So you can split the storage of credentials from the person that is, from the entity that's, giving you a digital wallet. So those are kind of the use cases. There's an identity hub backing storage use case as well. You know, you can use encrypted data vaults to store the backing data for identity hubs. We've spent a lot of time trying to align identity hubs and EDVs in this task force. So there's that as well. And then finally, this is kind of like, okay, like those are the use cases for EDVs, but what does an EDV actually do? And at its most base level, EDVs are really kind of simple things. They allow you to store files in an encrypted fashion in a vault. That's it, right? There are like five operations in general that you can do with files, on an EDV. So you can create the file, you can read the file, you can update the file, you can delete the file, and you can query across a bunch of different files. There's also some share stuff that happens, but that's really it. Like, you can just think of it as like a folder that you can store files in. All the operations between the individual and the EDV client, so this is the thing that reads and writes from the EDV server, are unencrypted. And on the left here is an example of what some data could look like. But when it hits the wire and goes to the EDV server, all the EDV server really sees is just encrypted data. It has no idea what you're, storing with them. And that's, you know, in general, the design of the system. It's pretty, pretty simple and straightforward, when you get down to it. And that's basically it. At this point, the chairs could kind of go into where we are as far as like, you know, status is concerned. As Derek mentioned, he has joined, the list of editors. I'm the other editor, on the spec. Super thrilled to have Derek, helping out, with the spec. There is, you know, here's a link to the latest spec. I think we have five implementations, right now, still trying to, you know, it's still experimental. We're still trying to get to, conformance test suite and that kind of thing, which Ori worked on, you know, quite a bit. So yeah, I mean, as far as technology is concerned, it's moving forward. It's being deployed. It's, you know, people are implementing it. And we're just working through issues and, pull requests on the calls every other week. Kalia, Dimitri, would y'all like to add anything to that?
No, that was great, Manu. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thanks.
Does the group have any questions?
I don't see anyone on the queue. Mamu just queued himself.
Just a quick question. So you said there's 5 current implementations. What's the current status of the spec? What's the path forward? And you always like to ask this question. What's the challenges for people to adoption?
Those are all great questions. Dimitri, Kalia, did y'all want to take that?
Sure. So, current status of the spec is it is actively being worked on by a joint working group between this group here, the CCG, and Decentralized Identity Foundation. So, weekly calls, we have 2 specs, they are not currently chartered for work groups, so this is more in the pre-work group incubation stage. So that's as far as the status of the spec. What was the other question? Challenges to adoption?
Yes.
Great question. So one of the challenges is that unlike a lot of the other storage services like OneDrive and Google Drive and all that stuff, which manage your encryption keys for you, one of the core goals of the Encrypted Data Vault is that you and your clients and your software manages the encryption keys. So the storage provider, the actual computers in the sky with hard drives, don't have any access to your data. So the reason that's an adoption challenge is that managing encryption keys and managing any kind of crypto keys is still very much new, is still very much a challenge, both from a human UI standpoint. Just ask the cryptocurrency community about lost wallets and all that stuff. And also from a tooling and library perspective. So that's definitely a challenge, and this group feels that is definitely overcomable with all the usual array of tools. Helper libraries, interoperability suites, good UI design, user education, all that stuff.
Phil, yeah, you're up next on the queue.
Thank you. There seems like there's an implication here for the development of digital wallets or the specs for digital wallets, as this could sounds like it's an interesting way for credential storage outside the context of the physical wallet itself. And I was just wondering, A, is that part of the design considerations here? And secondly, how would this then work in the context of the actual process, for example, for creating a virtual presentation from the wallet, or does it matter that the abstraction of the storage is done in this way? Thanks.
Also, great question. So I'm going to give a real short answer and then hand it over to Manu. So yes, it is very much as part of the design consideration of the group. That was the primary use case that the work started with, specifically being a secure encrypted storage for wallets. But Manu?
Yeah, it's a great question. We didn't want to presume people are going to use EDVs as backing stores. So it's very experimental right now. And any of the wallet, you know, specs and protocols absolutely should not presume an EDV behind the scenes. And I'd argue that if we expose it at that layer, we've messed up. But EDVs have good stories to tell when it comes to data portability and not getting locked into a vendor and that kind of stuff that we hope, people will get when they start, building out the storage subsystems for a wallet.
Manu, I saw you were on the queue.
Yeah, I'm going to go off the queue because we're running out of time.
Yeah. Okay. Ori, you're up next.
Yeah. I just wanted to say there's I left a link to some video recordings of demos regarding syncing wallet content, from a wallet to a remote EDV, pulling content from a remote EDV into a wallet using keys, that were presented, in that working group, over a year ago, probably. So I agree with Manu. Like, I don't think, EDVs should necessarily be exposed as a wallet interface, but from a portability standpoint, there are software libraries out there today that can help you if you're using an EDV, as a backing store, sync your content, between multiple, standards compliant implementations of EDVs.
Thanks, Ori. Mahmood, you're up next. I'll subscribe for you.
So conceptually speaking, if I have, let's say, an S3 bucket and I want to store stuff there and that's like my storage location, right? The EDV would be like the bucket itself. Would it be a layer on top of the bucket that would allow me the 5 different operations? Am I missing something conceptually? Is it the client that's talking to the bucket that's encrypting the data, or is it like the whole thing together?
Yeah. So you can think of EDVs as an interface layer in front of the S3 bucket, and the client does all the encryption and decryption client side. So you could have an EDV where its backing store is actually S3, but what you're storing in each bucket is a encrypted file.
Thanks, yes. Manu. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Dimitri.
I just wanted to add real quick. Yeah. So, pluggable backend stores is definitely, one of the goals of the spec, whether it's a local file system, mobile phones, file storage, or S3 or Google Drive or any of those services.
Great. Okay. So, Dimitri, Kalia, can you give us the 5-minute ban? He tends to be pretty taciturn, so maybe we can do 5 minutes.
There you go. Okay, channeling Dan. Who's sharing the screen? I just noticed somebody is sharing the screen. Great. So I can just ask you to. All right. So next slide. So let's talk about identity hubs. Identity hubs are another task force of the Secure Data Storage Working Group, same working group as the EDV spec. They are a slightly higher level spec if encrypted data vaults deal with low-level CRUD encrypted file store primitives. Identity hubs are more towards the higher end, personal data store end of the spectrum. So it is a data storage spec. It does not primarily focus on encryption. It's more focused on public data. It is the heart of data hub storage is a IPFS-based storage core with a layer of application logic having to do with messaging collections and some other APIs and an authorization layer. The one of the other goals being transparent replication between persons' various hubs. Next slide. Yeah, so the idea here is that hubs can be easy to use, convenient data storage backend for many application, mobile or web or anything like that. There is an intended level of interop with DIDs. So typically you would find a identity hub service in the services section of your DID document. So in order to reference to a file on your hub, you can use a DID URL, go through the DID resolver, reference your DID service, your hub service, and fetch the file from it. Go ahead.
Skip two slides because we've got what is the DID, and then this use case is one that we're particularly keen on, which is this is where there's a difference with the EDBs, which is that the storage will serve users if it has some understanding of the metadata around particular types of data. For example, my music playlist, that although the EDB might not, or the hub might not see the actual playlist, it knows there is a playlist inside of it and it can share it with another service on my behalf. Right. So there's this next level of understanding.
Thank you. Next slide. Yeah. So what you're seeing here is that, one of the primary use cases for hubs are public collections, here referenced by schema.org types. So, the idea here is to support some well-known types like to-do lists, like, music playlists, videos, and that sort of thing.
Right. But this use case actually is about private use cases. So it's like my to-do list.
Right. And this bid doesn't show, the authorization layer, but there is an authorization layer between, you and your data. And this, illustrates, multiple apps sharing a single data hub to enhance interoperability between them. And next slide. Yeah.
Okay. And that's it. We did it in 5 minutes.
Yay.
Okay. Actually, I was like looking at these. I thought, okay, these sound really interesting actually. So I was like wondering if, I mean, we went a bit over on one of the discussions earlier today, but I'm wondering if it makes sense for the community to actually let us have the time to go through these, use cases because they look actually really, interesting. As the community, do you guys want to have this slated for a future point to talk about it? Okay. Men are saying yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's happened is there's now like a weekly implementer call for identity hubs
and also a bi-weekly standards discussion, spec discussion call. So highly encourage everybody to join.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'd love to come back and talk, but I sort of feel like the decision to do two separate specs is pretty recent, so I think we should like let them progress a little bit more, especially on the hub side. Like the EDB side was pretty developed already and hubs is still finding its way. So we'd love to come back, but probably not until like around IW or something.
Okay, so that's great actually, because I think maybe what I can do is I can follow up with Clea, you and Dimitri and get the specific details on when you guys are meeting and talking about it. And maybe during one of your calls, you can maybe do a little like 101 part that those of us who are interested in learning more can join. And then I'm really curious to learn at some point in the future, you know, how the ID hubs and the data vaults support or do not support each other's activities. I know it's like not a question we have time to answer today, but I'm just really curious on how they work together and a little bit about that. So I'm happy to follow up with you guys behind the scenes and find out the information so that it's folks can join to have you guys do a little more chat in one of your calls. Does that sound like okay with you guys?
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, the jury's still out on the supporting role in interoperability of EDVs and hubs. But we definitely, like Kalia said, the current composition of the group is fairly new and the division into two task forces. So give us a little bit of time. But we are happy to come back and talk about this in more detail.
And this is the Thursday call that you guys alternate with EDV on 1 week and the identity hubs on the other. Cause I wasn't aware of that shift of it. I don't know. Maybe I missed some email on the list or something. So, great. Well, thanks for coming. Thanks, Manu, Kalia, Dimitri, Juan, Christina, everyone. Thank you, Mahmoud, for your great, scribing as always. So, we'll conclude today.